Chapter 33, Way Out of Line, The Making of Dirty Work. Many times young people will approach me to ask me how to make it in show business, and I always offer the same foolproof advice. Just remember three little words. Meet Adam Sandler. The rest pretty much takes care of itself. Sandler had vouched for me to be on SNL. In the summer break, he put me in his first film, Billy Madison, and then he told Robert Simons, who produced Billy Madison, you should give Normie a movie. And that was that. I went from being a low-paid road comic to starring in my own film due to one guy's help. I've never thanked Adam for doing all that for me, or told him how lost I'd be without his generosity. And I never will, either. That's because I'm a self-made man. So I had an offer to do a movie, but no ideas. That's when Frank came to the rescue. One night, while we were working late on Update, Frank came up with a concept. The movie would be about a guy who was good at getting revenge. So he and his buddy opened a revenge-for-hire business. Later in the film, it turns out his buddy is actually his brother. Spoiler alert! We brought on a third writer, Fred Wolf, who worked with us at SNL and had plenty of motion picture experience. Robert Simons told us that the next task was to select a director. This turned out to be a problem. I wanted Frank to direct Dirty Work. He knew the script better than anybody and had studied film at NYU. But the biggest reason I wanted Frank was that I already knew him. If we didn't hire Frank, I would have to meet some new guy and learn his name and pretend laugh at all his jokes and ask him if his parents were still alive and listen as the guy told me that they both died last week, days apart from each other. Then I would have to buy the guy an expensive watch. I really hated meeting new guys. So I got Robert Simons on the phone. Robert, I think we need to talk about a director. I got just the guy, said Robert. Is it Frank? No, it's Bob Saget. What are you, nuts? Let me ask you this, Norm. What comes to mind when you think of Bob Saget? I don't know. A bunch of shit, I guess. Norm, he's more than Full House in America's Funniest Home Videos. Did you know that he's already directed a film and won a Student Academy Award? What? That's right. It was a film school documentary called Through Adam's Eyes. It was about his 7-year-old nephew, who underwent facial reconstruction surgery. I watched it. Very moving stuff. Well, thanks for the wonderful news, Robert. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have to run. What's the hurry, Norm? I have to buy Bob Saget an expensive watch. When Frank, Fred, and I were writing Dirty Work, we had actors in mind for each part. I don't have the imagination necessary to create a man out of nothing, so we decided to go the opposite route. We wrote the movie by choosing our dream cast first and then writing characters based on them. We wanted Don Rickles. We got him. We wanted Chevy. We got him. We wanted Jack Warden. We got him. We wanted Sandler. We got him. We wanted Chris Farley. We got him. We wanted Bill Murray. We're still waiting to hear back. Our only problem was that we had written the script as a buddy comedy, and we hadn't yet cast the buddy. When it came to comedy films, Frank and Fred were experts. They told me that since I was a skinny guy, my buddy should be a fat guy. I got real mad and decided I needed to remind them who was boss. That's a bunch of horse shit. What about Laurel and Hardy? They were both skinny, and they were really funny. Turns out I was wrong on that one. So I continued, as my face grew red with anger. And what about Abbott and Costello, or Ma and Pa Kettle, or Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, or Jackie Gleason and Art Carney, or Belushi and Aykroyd? It seemed that every example I came up with not only hurt my argument, but bolstered theirs. But I saw a way out. Well, it takes a big man to admit he's wrong, and I admit I'm wrong, so I'm a big man. Big, big man. What about you two? Are you wrong? Frank answered, No, Norm. Fred and I are right. Yeah, that's what I thought, which makes you both very small men. And I feel sorry for you. We looked at every fat guy in Hollywood, but nobody seemed to work for the role, and we were beginning to panic. Then one night, 3 days before we were supposed to fly to Toronto, I happened to turn the TV on, and for the first time ever, I saw an episode of Mad TV. An actor named Artie Lang was talking straight to camera, not in character, and he was hilarious. What impressed me the most was that he wasn't relying on fat man tricks. He had a melancholy about him that reminded me of Belushi. I knew instantly that he was the guy for the part, so I phoned Robert Simons and told him about Artie. But it was a big part, and he informed me that an audition was necessary. So Artie met with Bob Saget and me. Artie's reading was perfect, and I knew we had our man. When he left, Saget and I phoned Robert Simons, and Robert said, "If he works for you guys, let's do it." But an hour later, Robert Simons called back. "Bad news. The guy's got a big coke problem." "So what?" I said. I had 6 grams of morphine rushing through me. "Listen, Robert, you know as well as anybody that it's drugs that makes a guy funny," I said. "Of course, Norm. But this guy got caught. He went to jail. It's public record. That's why he's back in New Jersey, out of the business." "God damn," I said. "Look, we can still make it work," Robert said. "But you have to be sure he stays clean the entire time he's in Canada. Can you promise me that?" "No," I said. It was such fun to be back in Canada, my true home, strong and free. I was born in the Great White North, and I remain to this day a Canadian citizen, and will till the day I die. And I'll tell you why. Canada is the country that shaped me, that taught me right from wrong, that turned me from a boy to a man. Also, that American citizenship test is way, way too hard. Trust me, I've tried it quite a few times. But no more. You know the old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me thrice, shame on Adam Egot, pretending to be me and failing even worse. Fool me 4 times. Shame on the guy behind the desk at the Immigration and Naturalization Office, who said he would see what he could do for 100 clams, and then said he couldn't do a damn thing, but kept the 100 clams anyway. Fool me 5 times. Shame on the filthy homeless bum who could rattle off all the presidents in less than a minute, but then the moment I gave him $20 to do the test in my stead, took off running down the street with a whoop and a holler. Fool me 6 times, shame on me again, for threatening to burn down the federal building in New York City if I wasn't given citizenship immediately. There would be no 7th time. Nobody ever accused this old country boy of being stupid. But it turned out to be all for the best anyway. I finally come to my senses. I was born a Canadian, and I'll die a Canadian. And I will forever be proud to count myself a citizen of Canada, the 14th greatest country in the world. A month after our first phone call, Bob Saget and I walked down the longest street in the world, Yonge Street, in Toronto. People recognized Saget everywhere we went and would say, "Hey, you're Bob Saget." And Saget would turn to them and say, "Thank you," as if it was a compliment. It was hot and crowded and dirty on the longest street in the world. Yonge Street runs near 120 miles from north to south. You can visit the Hockey Hall of Fame there, or have a donut and a cup of coffee at Tim Hortons, and the runaway kids are on every corner, selling love to the Americans who go up there to make movies cheap. And in the summer of 97, the kids that nobody misses were missing, and there was a bad man on the loose, and it wasn't Saget, and it wasn't me. And it wasn't Adam Egot either, I don't care what anybody says. Adam Egot had done things, sure, but they weren't bad things. They were the things that young men do when they need money. Breaking and entering, stealing cars, selling those pills you're supposed to take when your ankle hurts real bad, smuggling cigarettes across the border, and jerking off punks under the Queensboro Bridge for $15 a man. Those kind of things. But nobody ever got hurt meeting Adam Egot. Still, Saget and I decided we would keep Adam Egot out of sight so the Ontario Provincial Police wouldn't be sniffing around the movie set. If they saw a way to blame this whole Young Street unpleasantness on a young American boy, that would be just dandy with the Canadian John Law. Just dandy.